The following is a class given by His Holiness Jaya Bhataka Swami on September 29, 1989 in Atlanta, Georgia. The class begins with a reading from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Ancha Lila, Chapter 19, Verse 108, and continues to the purport on Verse 112. The class then continues with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th Canto, Verse 1, Chapter 51.
Priyaravapadani bhashase mrita sanjeevikayanaya gira karavani king adyate priyam vadame valgita khanta kokila. Dear cuckoo, you possess a very sweet voice and you are very expert in imitating others. You could excite even a dead body with your voice. Therefore tell the queens that good behavior is their proper duty. Na chalasi na vadasi uddhara buddhe kshitidhara chintyase mahantam artham api bata vasudeva nandangrim vayam eva kamaya sestanair vidhartum. O magnanimous mountain, you are very grave and sober, absorbed in thoughts of doing something very great. Like us, you have vowed to keep within your heart the lotus feet of Krishna, the son of Vasudeva. Sushadagradha kashitavatta sindhu patnya sampratya pashta kamalasya ishta bartu yadavadavayana madupate pranayavalokam aprapya mushta hidaya purukashitasma. O rivers, wives of the ocean, we see that the ocean does not give you happiness. Thus you have almost dried up and you no longer bear beautiful lotuses. The lotuses have become skinny and even in the sunshine they are devoid of all pleasure. Similarly, the hearts of us poor queens are all dried up and our bodies are skinny because we are now devoid of loving affairs with Madhupati. Are you like us dried without beauty because you are devoid of Krishna's loving glance? Hansa swagatam asyatam piva payo bruyanga sorekatam dutan twanganu vidama kachid ajita swastyasta uktam pura king of anas chala sohridas marati tankasmat bhajamo bhayam kshodra lapaya kamadang srimamati saivaika nishtas. O Swan, you have come here so happily. Let us welcome you. We understand that you are always Krishna's messenger. Now while you drink this milk, tell us what his message is. Has Krishna said something about us to you? May we inquire from you whether Krishna is happy? We want to know. Does he remember us? We know that the goddess of fortune is serving him alone. We are simply maidservants. How can we worship he who speaks sweet words but never fulfills our desires? Text 109 of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Mahaprabhu Nityananda Dohar Dasir Das Jare Kripa Korintar Hoyayite Vishash. If one becomes a servant of the servants of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Nityananda Prabhu and is favored by them, he can believe in all these discourses. Shraddha kori sunaiha sunaite mahasukh khandive adhyatikadi kutharkadi duk. Just try to hear these topics with faith, for there is great pleasure even in hearing them. That hearing will destroy all miseries pertaining to the body, mind, and other living entities, and the unhappiness of false arguments as well.
Chaitanya charitamrita nitya nutan sunite sunite juraya hidaye sravan.
Chaitanya Charitamrita is ever increasingly fresh. Continuously hearing it pacifies one's heart and ear.
Sri Rupa Raghunatha Purijaras Chaitanya Charitamrita Kohe Krishna Das. Praying at the lotus feet of Sri Rupa and Raghunath, always desiring their mercy, I, Krishna Das, narrate Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, following in their footsteps. Thus the Bhaktivedanta purports to Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antya Lila, 19th chapter, describing the Lord's devotion to his mother, his mad speeches and separation from Krishna, his rubbing his face against the walls and his dancing in the Jagannath Vallabh Garden. So in this last chapters of the Chaitanya Charitamrita describes the intense ecstasy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in separation of Krishna. Although Lord Chaitanya was the most strict sannyasi, member of the renounced order of life, he would not permit any private audience with any woman, or would not hear any discussion about any worldly topics. Yet he would be absorbed in hearing the loving affairs between Krishna and the gopis, Krishna and the queens in Dwarka. Because those activities are totally non-material, completely transcendental. He wouldn't discuss those things in a public, but would generally just chant Hare Krishna, or for a little more philosophical, then they would discuss other topics of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, etc. But amongst very confidential associates, then he would discuss and relish these topics of Krishna's intimate pastimes. We know that Lord Krishna has five types of primary relationship that a devotee can have with the Lord. Neutral, servitude, friendship, parental, and conjugal. Each of them offer a different intensity, ever-increasing, of devotional exchange with the Lord. None of these relationships are material. Material relationships that would appear similar to these categories, a master and a servant, a friend and a friend, a parent and a child, a husband and a wife, are perverted or distorted reflections, because they're on the basis of the material body. But the relationships in the spiritual world with Krishna are completely transcendental. And the different relationships allow different intensities of exchanges. Although the loving exchanges between the devotees and conjugal love appear very similar to the loving affairs in the material world, that there's nothing to do with material affairs like that. It says that even great scholars, they get confused. Sometimes great scholars in India, they can't understand these pastimes of Krishna with the queens of Dwarka or with the gopis, the erotic pastimes. They don't realize that every soul is the energy of Krishna. Therefore, Krishna is the only Purusha in one sense. He's the supreme enjoyer. He's the supreme Purusha, and all of the energies are his prakriti. So it's natural that in the pastimes in the spiritual world, some devotees engage in Krishna's service as gopis or as wives. But in the spiritual world, there's no procreation. There's no sex life as we know it in the material world. It's simply the loving sentiment between the Lord and his devotee taking these different forms, these different relationships. So in each relationship there's a development. The relationship in neutral is just awe and respect. When it develops into a servitor to a servant-master relationship, then service is added to that. When that's further developed to friendship, then there's an equality and familiarity amongst friends. But service is also, and appreciation is also included. But instead of awe, that becomes just an appreciation. It's like a friend appreciates the good qualities of his friend. But the fear of a servant, or the awe of an admirer, like a great sage admires God, that is there but in another form. It's there in the sense of just admiration in an equal level. So each level as it develops, the devotion contains the previous qualities. the parental, the parents of Krishna, the so-called parents, although God has no parent, He's eternal, He's the father of everyone, yet He can agree to become someone's child, take a little baby form and allow a devotee to serve Him as a parent. And as a parent, the parent thinks they're bigger than the child. The parent always wants to protect the child. So even though Krishna is the supreme protector of everyone, his parents always think, I have to protect Krishna. If I don't protect Krishna, some danger will befall Krishna. So the parents actually become greater than God in a relationship that Krishna will come with the shoes of his father on his head, come and serve the parents, although he's the supreme independent, but he likes if sometimes his devotee is in a superior position to him, because he's always on top of everybody. So when he can find a devotee who's so loving to him that can take the position of a parent in pastimes, then through Yoga Maya, the special potency of the Lord, which controls the different pastimes and relationships, the parent, the devotee who's going to act as a parent, just sees Krishna in terms of that relationship. But similarly, in the conjugal relationship, it includes all the previous others, but as a wife or a lover, then sometimes one considers that the husband is henpecked or that he's dependent. But this other intensity of wanting to please, wanting to serve, that's considered the most complete of all the different rasas. But it's the most difficult to understand because it's easy to mistake it for the material loving relationship or so-called loving relationships. And this is what bewilders great sages, is that they're not able to distinguish that actually, just like in a previous pastime of Lord Ram, great sages approached Ram in the forest of Dandakaranya and prayed that in his future appearance as Krishna, when he would be taking many queens, that they could take birth as women to become his queens and serve him. Because it gives an opportunity of the most intimate kind of devotional service. It's not that there's anything to do with the material world, but these are different mediums for devotees to engage in their devotional service. So here in these verses in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's expressing the intense separation when Krishna would go off somewhere to protect the Pandavas or to do something and he would leave Dwaraka. Then the queens are drying up in separation of Krishna. When Krishna left Vrindavan, then the residents of Vrindavan, especially the gopis, they'd be drying up, going practically mad, talking to bumblebees. And Krishna once sent Uddhava to give the message to Radharani that actually she should know that God is in everyone's heart and not to feel any bad and things. But when Uddhava came and saw the intensity of Radharani's love, practically her madness and separation of Krishna, then he realized that he was talking on a very superficial level about devotion to God, that her pure love for Krishna was so great that he became converted. He said, if I could become even just a blade of grass in Vrindavan and have Radharani step on my head, have the gopis step on my head, that would be perfection of my life. He came back to Krishna, a changed person, after the association with the gopis. Although he came with the idea, yes, I'll preach to them and why they should be disturbed, Krishna. But when he was there, he saw that he never saw such an intense love of Krishna as they were manifesting. So Lord Chaitanya taught that although Krishna's pastimes are not physically or visibly present now, but we can serve Krishna in separation. That's actually the perfection of devotional service, when we can serve Krishna in separation. Similarly, while the spiritual master is present, it's an opportunity to try to learn as much about devotional service so that you take advantage. Because when the spiritual master is not physically present, then we have to serve in separation. So the ideal thing is to learn as much as we can while we have the opportunity. Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Narayanam Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Saraswatim Vyasam
Tato Jaya
Madhyajit Mukakuroti Bachalam Mamalangayate Kiringat Kipatamang Bande Paramananda Madhavam Tat Etat Sodasa Kalam
Tat Etat Sodasa Kalam
Lingam Shakti Trayam Mahat
Lingam Shakti Trayam Mahat
Tattenu Sanskritim Pumsi
Tattenu Sanskritim Pumsi
Harshasoka Bhoyartidam
Harshasoka Bhoyartidam.
The subtle body is endowed with 16 parts, the 5 knowledge acquiring senses, the 5 working senses, the 5 objects of sense gratification, and the mind. This subtle body is an effect of the 3 modes of material nature. It is composed of insurmountable strong desires, and therefore it causes the living entity to transmigrate from one body to another in human life, animal life, and life as a demigod. When the living entity gets the body of a demigod, he is certainly very jubilant. When he gets a human body, he is always in lamentation. And when he gets the body of an animal, he is always afraid. In all conditions, however, he is actually miserable. His miserable condition is called sansriti, or transmigration in material life. Purport. The sum and substance of material conditional life is explained in this verse. The living entity, the 17th element, is struggling alone. Life after life, this struggle is called sansriti, or material conditional life. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said that the force of material nature is insurmountably strong. Daivihesha gunamayi mama maya duratyaya. Material nature harasses the living entity in different bodies, but if the living entity surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he becomes free from this entanglement, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Mam eva je prapadyante mayam etam tarantite. Thus his life becomes successful. Thus end of purport and translation to text 51, chapter 1, canto 6 of the Srimad Bhagavatam Bhaktivedanta purports in the matter of the history of the life of Ajamila. So, taking birth in the heavenly planets, souls feel jubilation. Here in a material, in a human form of life, there's lamentation. Animals are filled with fear. We have experience of humans and animals. We don't have experience of demigods. But people have heard that there's a heaven, and you go there and you can really have a lot of sense gratification. Usually the concept in the religious books of different religions in the world of heaven is a place where there's a lot of enjoyment. The Quran talks about various types of sense gratification you can enjoy. So people, they have an idea, like the Mormons, they consider heaven means you get back together with your family and you live forever after with family members, and it's happy, no suffering. You're basically God conscious. But the idea of this concept of heaven fits in with the upper planetary systems in the universe, where people are pious entities who follow the laws of God. They have good material sense gratification. But according to the Vedas, one doesn't stay there eternally. One comes down from those planets and is forced to get to take birth in a human form of life or as an animal, according to their karmas. One can be in the heavenly planets for thousands or millions of years of our calculation. So one thinks it's there for a very long time, but in terms of eternal time, it's a drop in the bucket, so to speak. It's just a small period of time which quickly passes by. The real goal of life is to go back to Godhead, back to the original spiritual kingdom of God. But in the spiritual kingdom of God, there's no material sense gratification. everything, excuse me, is in relationship to the service of the Lord. That means as long as one is thinking about their personal sense gratification, as long as that is the goal in their life, how to make their own bodies happy, then they are forced to come again and again in the material world. Of course, some people are not so selfish just of making their own body happy. They're a little more broad-minded. They want to make their family members happy. People work hard, especially in India, you see. The family unit is still very strong, like it used to be in America a century ago, where even the brothers all live together with their children. I saw one joint family with 5 brothers living together and 55 family members. And they considered all the nephews and their own children, just like they're all their children. And all the cousins, as they all live together, they considered each other cousin brothers. And even in India, it's amazing if you meet someone. I mean, if they say, "He's my brother," you had to ask, means like, "Your own brother?" "Yes, my own cousin brother." Where like in America, you know, a cousin, you know, you may see him once in your life or something, you know, a cousin doesn't necessarily mean much because the families are so spread out a lot of times. It depends, you know, family to family, ethnic group to ethnic group. But in India, if it's a cousin brother, like your own uncle's son, that's like, and then even they say often, you know, "No, he's my own brother. He's my sister's husband's uncle's nephew." Something, you know, from through marriage, you know, and it's just, you know, really close, you know. And that's like real, you know, that's. And then sometimes when you're like traveling, and if you find someone who comes from the same county or the same village, how do you feel so happy? In fact, Madhu Pandit, where was he? Was in Spain or somewhere, and he met someone that came from, what was it? Somewhere you met a...
Yeah.
Just from India?
Yes, just from India.
Just from India, I said, "A country brother!" I felt so happy, you know, to meet a fellow.
Didn't leave me for 10 minutes.
But if you're actually from the same village, they say the village brother. Apun. I'm my own brother. Same village. So, that has gone a long way in preserving traditions and things like that. Had a good effect. So some people, naturally, they really try to work for their family, they work for their village, they work for their state, or their... Some are patriots who work for the country, they give their life for the country. And, but of course, this is still all on a material platform. So what it does is it brings us back again to the material world. Prabhupada explained it. There's different levels. A person's a little broad-minded, he thinks of the country, then someone thinks of humanity, the world, ecology. Now there's some people that are really concerned with the greenhouse effect, endangering the whole world. They're concerned with the ecology. They're concerned with kind of much broader, you can say, almost a universal welfare of the whole humanity or the whole planet. Even you have people concerned about species which are endangered, extinction. But actually be concerned of all living entities. That is a true broad-mindedness. You get someone who's worrying about, we saw in a TV special, some people in Africa who were so concerned about the hundreds of thousands of wildly beasts which were being killed due to mismanagement in Botswana. But on the TV they were saying how they couldn't wait to get back home and have a nice shrimp dinner. So what about the poor shrimp? They want to crawl around in the bottom of the ocean just as much as the wildly beasts want to run around in the field. So, Prabhupada, he would explain that how a Krishna conscious person, by seeing a the soul of everything. How actually the Lord is Father, the origin, the absolute truth, basis of everything. So they try to work for the welfare of the whole universe without any kind of prejudice or distinction. That, all right, one, you know, wildly beasts are all right, but shrimp don't count. Or saving the animals in the rainforest are important, but we can slaughter the cow. The devotees, they try to avoid killing any animal. It's not a life and death situation. It's quite easy to be healthy. It's natural, medically proven. Eating a vegetarian diet, and especially the scriptures say we human beings should eat food offered to Krishna. Krishna only accepts leaves, flowers, grains, fruits, milk, things in a mode of goodness. So eating sacrament, eating sanctified, offered food is the proper food for a spiritualized human being. There's no animal that wants to be killed. There's no chicken that, if you give him a chance, if he sees the chopper coming, isn't going to run away. They even run after they chop their head off. They don't want to be killed. When you go fishing, the fish try to swim the other way. That's what makes it difficult for the fisherman, because the fish does wants to escape. He doesn't want to end up on the frying pan of the fisherman. So the culture of hunters is considered to be a kind of a barbaric or aboriginal type of culture. Prabhupada used to call the Americans and the Western people white aborigines. Putting colors on their face was the difference between tribal people that put colors on their face and ladies who cover their face with makeup to attract the opposite sex. It's all on the bodily platform. It has nothing to do with any higher spiritual culture. So although we're proud of our technology and our medicine and so many other things, but we should fully develop it to a broader universal viewpoint. But this can only come about if people become philosophically and spiritually awakened. So although there's so many good points, Prabhupada said the American people, the Western people, they have intelligence, they have money, they have determination, they have so many good features. The only thing they're missing is Krishna. They're missing a spiritual, complete understanding of who they are, what is life, what is the universe. If they could add that, then everything would be perfect. Instead, you get heads of state saying we must eradicate the purge of chemical warfare from the world. But they're the same heads of state which have created much of the chemical warfare in the world. And they're talking about simply reducing the stockpile to enough chemicals to kill only half of the population of the world. The nuclear bombs that are there now apparently could blow up all the human beings about 28 times. So that every year they reduce it 5%, so then we'd only get blown up 10 times or 5 times. So this is basically because the focus on life, focus on what is the purpose of life, and what is our function and role in the whole material world is not there. We see the drug problem every day in the newspapers, and they don't know. Like there's a supply and demand that people want. Sense gratification. One boy wrote a letter. He said, how can you say no? But when it's the only way of life I know, how can I say no to that? Everyone is doing it. 25% of all the kids in high school take cocaine, 50% take marijuana, 60 to 75% take different forms of alcohol. So where's the question of saying no? What other life is there? So Srila Prabhupada tried to present, and he presented, and tried to spread this alternative, positive alternative viewpoint of life, that actually real human life should be directed towards self-realization, towards realizing God. When that happens, automatically drug problem, alcohol problem, all these different problems, the problems of ecology, they're solved. Just if human society would redirect its ultimate goal from consumerism and sense gratification to self-realization and salvation with a proper philosophical understanding of God and the relationship of the universe with Krishna, it'd be solved. Lord Chaitanya revealed the transcendental pastimes of Krishna, even the confidential, conjugal pastimes, because generally people think of God in an impersonal way. They think that the absolute truth or God is a light or something impersonal. They don't really relate with the Lord so much in a personal way that would replace the relationship we have in the material world. Either they relate as an order supplier, like give you a shopping list, I want this, I want that, help my neighbor get healthy, help this one get healthy, help that one. We go to God as if He's our servant. Give me this, give me that. Where the actual love is when you go without any demands and you try to serve the Lord, to please Him. Out of reciprocation, out of His own causeless mercy, He naturally fulfills desires of His devotees. Even when Srila Prabhupada was sick, he said, don't pray to Krishna that I should stay here. Pray that if it pleases Krishna, if it's His desire, that I stay. Then please allow the spiritual master to be healthy. The devotee has no demand on Krishna. If Krishna wants something to happen, the devotee accepts that. Within Krishna's desires, if Krishna has different options, if it's all the same to Krishna, then the devotee may express that we like this particular thing. But if Krishna has another plan, the devotee doesn't want to interfere with it, but wants that Krishna be pleased. So this is the difference between pure devotion and mixed devotion. So the actual philosophical presentation of our relationship with Krishna as presented by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the most complete and elevated presentation in the whole world. When we say that everything is already there in the Bible or in the Quran, that Lord Chaitanya has already categorized different levels of devotion. Devotion following scriptural rules with a desire to get something back from God. Devotion with a desire for salvation. Devotion with no desire, but with incomplete knowledge. Devotion with full knowledge and full desire to serve Krishna, but no personal desire to have anything independent of what Krishna wants. Lord Chaitanya, and then these are, of course, there's also desire of self, of mystic power and things and many other, but everything has already been categorized, how the different levels of relationship and development of relationship with Krishna are there. So one can easily see, what level am I on? How pure is my love for Krishna? How pure is my love for God? Do I do things just for my own sensual gratification rather than for Krishna's pleasure? All right, I may have material desire. How can I gradually, if we cannot fix our mind in Krishna fully, then by regulation, by a kind of rule, we can serve Krishna free of these material desires. Then the happiness that we get in relationship with God, in relationship with the Supreme Lord, that transcendental happiness, Prabhupada explained, what does that mean? That a human being is either hankering for something, I have to have it, just like someone has $5 billion, says, I have to take over Time Magazine, or I have to take over this other company, I have to merge junk bonds and leverage buyouts and so I can make another $500 million. It's got too much liquid asset, I can take this company and merge here and get more. So even though they have so much, and sometimes they get caught cheating, what they call it, in the stock market, in-house information, I forget what's the name, it's like insider trader information. In other words, dealers, they have insider information that some company is going to do something. So they sell that off to some big people, which gives somebody the edge. They know 3 days ahead of everybody else, this company is going to go bankrupt or merge or do this or do that. So then they can dump their stock or they can do something. And that way they can make more money. They get caught doing it against the law in America. It's cheating. It's all for greed. Even though people are filthy, rich with millions and millions of dollars to make another 100 million more, they risk everything and then they end up getting sentenced for years and years and hundreds of millions of dollars of fines. Even though people have so much, they're hankering for more. When somebody gets it, when they get what they want for a minute, you know, they feel that little bit of elation, but that, how long does that last? And practically immediately, they get afraid. Some will try to take it away. Something may happen to the thing that I love, I've desired, now I have it. So we've got this protection, keeping it. And one time in Bolivia, some devotee was going and selling surveillance security equipment to the rich people in the country because they're afraid of people coming and stealing from them at night. So they went and they had, you know, monitor TVs going around. So even though they have so much, they have to be constantly afraid of people coming to steal it. And that's the nature of the human life. And then eventually you lose it. Whatever you have, you lose it somehow or another. And then when that happens, then you're lamenting. So human life means it's one of lamentation in different forms, through hankering, fear, lamentation. There's practically speaking no peace. And then animal life means you look at a bird. No, I can't move my head anymore so much. But I mean, like, you know, it's like they're always moving their head. They're completely afraid. They're looking around. You go up, you know. Because animals are always afraid. Especially when they see the human beings trying to shoot them and things. They really get afraid. Generally speaking, animals are always looking around. It's very rare to find an animal that's not afraid. Their nature is to be afraid. Because there's always one animal is the food of another. Life in the jungle means that one animal eats another animal. Cat eats mouse. Wolf eats cat, leopard eats wolf, tiger eats leopard, whatever, tiger eats deer, zebra, etc. So the human beings, when they are also like very much in the mode of passion, they're meat eaters, they tend to lose the quality of mercy, become very ruthless in dealings, and that also increases their frustration, actually brings back karmas where they're forced to suffer different ways. One of the problems we see in the world today about the ecology, we discuss it sometimes because it's a topical thing, is that people are concerned with all the rainforest being cut down. Because why are they cutting down? For grazing, for more cattle, for providing more meat, to provide most of the meat in the world, like 60% of the meat in the world is eaten by America and Northern Europe or something. I heard some kind of statistic like that. It's a tremendous amount of meat. Most people can't afford that much meat. They are forced majority vegetarian, if not complete. In India, even if a person's not a vegetarian, you can usually only afford to eat meat once a week out of economic reasons, even they like to eat it. The problem is that the governments have studied, and scientists have studied, that it takes many times more land to graze cattle for meat purpose than it does to grow grains to feed human beings. It's fairly uneconomical. So if most of the people in the world became vegetarian, you wouldn't have to cut down, there would be no market for all that meat. And they wouldn't cut down the rainforests because there would be no market, they don't need that much meat. Beef cattle, so you don't need that much grazing land. You could feed the whole planet five times over if they're vegetarian, according to the World Health Organization. But because so much land is used for growing tobacco and grazing for beef, there's a shortage. Then even if they can produce the grains cheap enough, the governments want to keep the price high. They dump the grains in the ocean sometimes. America often does that. Did it in the past. I don't know if they do it anymore. Dump it in the ocean. Keep up the price of corn and wheat. Where's the question of God not providing? He's provided for everybody. But because we don't see our responsibility to the universe, to Krishna, to God, that He's the proprietor. So everything's in an unbalanced situation. For people, they think, well, the Hare Krishnas are crazy. But they don't know even what our message is. They don't know what we're talking. They don't know that what we're concerned with is the same thing they're concerned with. And they need to know these solutions. And maybe gradually they can see that this is actually maybe the long-term solution, maybe not the immediate, you know, solution they're hoping for. But it's a real solution, that society has to be directed more towards self-realization, more towards a broader spiritual universal view to bring things into a balance. Otherwise you can spend $800 million trying to keep the drugs from coming in America, but the people, this brings up the price. The price become more here. So people risk their life. It's a death sentence in Malaysia if you get caught possessing more than a small quantity of drugs. If you're a dealer, and they consider like over an ounce or something, or over, I don't know, a small quantity, you're a dealer, it's a death penalty. Still, people are smuggling drugs into Malaysia, and being killed when they get caught. So even when it's so strict, they can't stop it completely. It definitely restricts it to some degree, but still it's a big problem because the people want it. So basically in the whole world, this problem of drugs, this problem that people are facing, is because of a lack of Krishna consciousness. Because of a lack of God consciousness in the world, these things are increasing. And the only way to solve it is that people, anyone who believes in God, anyone who's a theist, they should all try to increase the God consciousness in the world and bring about a greater understanding. So Lord Chaitanya's message was that we should understand these teachings of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavat. They're not sectarian teachings, teachings which are meant just for the Hindus. They were teachings given for the whole humanity to understand better who God is, who we are, what the universe is, how We fit into everything. So here in this verse it explains what is a subtle body. The previous verse was the gross body, practically speaking. Here's a subtle body, 16 parts, knowledge acquiring senses, working senses, 5 objects of sense gratification, and the mind. What does this to do with sectarian religion? This could be a science text. You have, you know, hands, feet, leg. If you just happen to take this out and didn't know this was the Srimad Bhagavatam, this could be some kind of a scientific text. Maybe some of the subtle body is a bit rare word they use in the science. Nothing to do with a sectarian religion. This is a very practical knowledge. We have 5 knowledge acquiring senses: hearing, smelling, tasting, feeling, touching, feeling. Was it hearing and seeing? 5 working senses. We have the hands are working, the legs are working, the digestive tract is working, the genital is a working sense. What else is working? And the mouth, chewing, speech. Yeah, no, speech is working. That mouth, that's part of digestive, the whole thing. Then there's the objects of sense gratification. These objects actually are on a subtle platform. When you have knowledge acquiring senses, then there are objects of these senses, things we see. We can see a certain range of colors and things. We can hear a certain range. A cat can hear a different range. A dog can hear things we can't hear. They got special machines you can buy that scare away rats. We can't hear it, but the rats can hear it. It drives them crazy. They run away. But types of objects of here, these are on a subtle platform. There's these 5 types of objects. Somehow these objects have a relationship with the senses on a subtle platform. Why we want to taste something, why we want to see, feel, hear, these are all seated on a subtle mental, subtle platform, which is all under control of the mind. So this subtle body is controlled by the modes of material nature. It's a product of the material nature. So he explains that in this subtle body there's insurmountable desires. That's why the living entity, they can't stop desiring. They're going from one thing to another. It's there right in our inner psyche, in our subtle makeup. So we're forced to transmigrate from one body to another, depending on our different desires, until we become Krishna conscious. When we start to desire to serve Krishna with our senses, with our mind, and that's not material, and so that transcends and purifies the gross and subtle body. And like a magnet, it brings us back to Krishna, back to the spiritual world. It's the only way to counteract this material situation. So we should understand how the material world is working. These books are meant for that. They're practical scientific texts for everyone. To understand what this material body is, what the subtle body is, what causes us to have a particular body, how we're changing from one body to the next, and how we can avoid taking another material body after this. Who wants to take another conditioned material body in ignorance, stay in the wheel of conditional life? If we can serve Krishna, it doesn't matter what kind of body we have. But if you're in ignorance, being in this body is the most hellish situation. Hare Krishna.